Well, it's been an interesting week, that's for sure. We are in a series through the book of Nehemiah. I encourage you to read through that. Again, like I said last week, the book of Nehemiah is one that's often preached from a level of leadership. And it does, it has a lot of leadership principles in there. But I'm taking a look at it from a community standpoint because there's a whole community that was blessed by Nehemiah. There was a community in need, and we know that wherever you are, if this is your house and your church, we're going to community is Columbiana and the surrounding area. If it's some other church and you're visiting with us, we thank you, but your community is there as well. And so it's not about what I can do or even what my team can do. It's about the community, what we're going to do in partnering with the community. And last week, we talked about we had to have a heart for the Lord and a burden for the Lord. And the first thing we need to do is pray over it. Because as he heard what had happened about the walls in Jerusalem, like the first thing he did was pray. He had a heart that the Lord had for that community. And as we're going to find out, this was 140 years after the walls had fallen that he heard about it. So it's not like his brother and sisters over there. It's his ancestors' home. So he had this heart and was just like, wow, like I cannot believe that this happened. I need to pray for this and see what the Lord wanted me to do. And so in that first chapter, the Lord told Nehemiah what he was going to do. So then he had to ask the king's permission, and we went through all of that. So the Lord had to download a vision. And so we're going to take a look at this week where vision inspires faith and action. You have to have a vision first. Sometimes that vision is going to be given to you by somebody else. Like when we get into a corporate situation like this, it's like, okay, pastor, what's the vision for the church? All right, if you're at work, we don't call it vision, but where are we going with this? Okay, that's great that you have us doing this, but what's that going to do? So you have to sell the vision no matter where you are. There's a vision before you do something. You don't just go and do it. In fact, in the Bible, it says you have to count the cost, which means you have to know ahead what it's going to do. How much is this going to literally cost me? What's it going to cost my family? What's the vision for it? And then once you have that, then you can take that step of faith and into action. Our text today is from Nehemiah 2. We're actually going to skip down a little bit, starting in verse 11 through 20. This is Nehemiah speaking. I went to Jerusalem, and after staying there 3 days, and I think that's really interesting that three comes up again, I set out during the night with a few others. I had not told anyone what my God had put in my heart to do for Jerusalem. There were no mounts with me or other animals with me except the one I was riding on. By night, I went out through the valley gate towards the Jackal Well and the Dung Gate, examining the walls of Jerusalem, which had been broken down, and its gates, which had been destroyed by fire. Then I moved on toward the Fountain Gate and the King's Pool, but there wasn't enough room for my mount to get through. So I went up the valley by night, examining the wall. Finally, I turned back and re-entered through the valley gate. The officials did not know where I'd gone or what I was doing, because as yet I had said nothing to the Jews or the priests or the nobles or officials or any others who would be doing the work. Then I said to them, and he's talking to the officials here, "You see the trouble we are in? Jerusalem lies in ruins, and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and we will no longer be in disgrace." I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. They replied, "Let us start rebuilding." So they began this good work. But when Sanballat and the Horonite and Tobiah, the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab had heard about it, they mocked and ridiculed us. "What is this that you're doing?" they asked. "Are you rebelling against the king?" I answered them by saying, "The God of heaven will give us success. We, his servants, will start rebuilding. But as for you, you have no share in Jerusalem or any claim or historical right to it." There's a lot in there, and we're going to dive into a little bit of it, but he didn't even tell his people that was with him what he was doing. Like, could you imagine being one of those people? Why are we walking around this ruined city? He didn't share the vision with them even. They didn't know. Like, I can't imagine me going, hey, come on, let's come with me. All right, we're going on a journey. Yeah, we're going to go on a journey. It's gonna be fun. And then you get there and you don't tell them anything and you're walking around these ruins. Like, I don't know. It'd be kind of weird for me. That's exactly what he did. In fact, there was places they couldn't even get through with what they had. They had to walk. And then for him to go to the officials and go, do you see what it is? The walls are, yeah, they've seen for the last 140 years. Not telling me anything new. I mean, I can't imagine somebody coming to my house and like, do you see how it is? Yeah, I live in it. Right? Hello? We've been living in this forever. You did not. So I could see where that could cause attention. But what was important for him was the fact that he told them also about the gracious hand of God. And I think that helped him enter into the grace that he's going to have with them. But the thing of it is, and it brings us to my first point, is you have to see the reality before you. Sometimes we don't want to admit the reality in front of us. Sometimes we are living in something that we've lived in for a very long time. Maybe not 140 years, because I don't know that anybody here is 140 years old. We're not biblical. We're not going to live to 900. But you've lived with something. We all have. We've lived with something. It could be something as small as, oh, I never picked that up because it's always there. It's the dog's toy or whatever it is. That's just the way it always is. But somebody else goes, do you realize that somebody could trip over that? In fact, we had every time somebody comes into the church, like, do you realize? And they point something out. Like, I did, but I didn't. I'll point this out. We had someone who has a cane, and she goes in the bathroom. She's like, there's no handrails in here. Like, and we're working on that, by the way. But it's something that, like, yeah, I knew we needed that, but until somebody really pointed that out, it was like, oh, that's now something we have to do. And he's just pointing out the reality. Again, he said, do you see it? Okay, now we pointed it out. We see the reality. In Lamentations, it says it this way, talking about seeing it and understanding, it says, how deserted lies the city, once so full of people. How like a widow is she, who once was great among nations. She who was queen among the provinces has now become a slave. Bitterly she weeps at night, tears on her cheeks, among all her lovers. There is no one to comfort her. All her friends have betrayed her. They have become like her enemies. After affliction and harsh labor, Judah has gone into exile. She dwells among the nations. She finds no resting place. All who pursue her have overtaken her in the midst of her distress. Lamentations, understand, began right after the fall of Jerusalem and the exile of the people into Babylon. It's describing the grief and suffering that happened and the fact that they'd be forced to live in a foreign nation. It will be another 140 years before Nehemiah even enters, but they're looking at the reality then. And so they live generation after generation after generation of this grief and this sorrow and living in this poor me mentality. At first they're like, oh, it was, but after time and being beat down, you could see where it's like, well, it's just who we are. We never get ahead. We're always the ones going to be in slavery. We're the ones that's going to be living in ruin. And I think that's true of us in our own lives, because we get into the woe is me, and then we find others to surround ourselves with. Like, can you believe this is going on? Oh, man, I know. I'm going through the same exact thing. And all it does is reinforce that wow, I'm living in something I don't need to be living in, but that's just who I am. Then Nehemiah, who sees the same exact destruction that they've looked at, which, to be honest, after the first destruction, over 140 years, probably saw even more, other things falling down and into further ruin, he needed to see for himself. Because he had the heart for God. He knew that there was a burden there. He had to go see what it was that this was, you know, what God, what'd you place on my heart? For us, this week, I got a revelation of why we're in Columbiana. It was like, wow, I had to see it for myself. Now, it's not for me to like go, hey, can you believe this is going on? They're like, yeah, we know. But it is to walk side by side with them, as we will find out through the book of Nehemiah, that he doesn't just claim it. He doesn't just say, you need to do something. It was, let's do something. See, sometimes our current situation can corrupt or pollute how we think. Because over time, what we then think is really not where it started anyhow. Over time, our new reality is something we have developed after we've been confirmed, and then we hear something else, and then, oh yeah, all you have to do is Google your symptoms. You're dead today. Right? Because we start heading down this thought process like, you know what? It's probably because they didn't want you in that workplace to begin with, and that's why they made it difficult. Maybe not. And sometimes it's our poor decisions that we've owned. It's not the enemy. Sometimes it's on us. And then we head down this, and like, the enemy's just attacking me over and over and over. Maybe because he's found now a crack that you have opened yourself. And it takes someone to come alongside of you to go, do you see what's happening? And you go, a lot of times, myself included, yeah, I know, because I'm living it, right? We get defensive because these are our scars. You don't get to tell me about that because I'm the one living through that. But really, they're coming with a heart for the Lord. They're coming to come alongside of you. Now, some people won't. Some people like to point out your flaws, and they just will. That's just the world that we live in. We should not be surprised that the world acts like the world. We should be surprised if our Christian brothers and sisters come alongside of us and start talking as if, yep, that's who you are, and declaring that scar that's on you and creating another one or making it deeper. That's when you should be concerned. Because when they start doing that, then you have to start questioning whether or not they really want to walk beside you and whether or not they're really walking with the Lord. Because it becomes all about perception. Because now you're perceiving your situation that you have as something that it was never meant to be. It kind of reminds me of a story, and maybe you've heard this before, and it's actually been the catalyst for when I know the Lord is moving me to a different situation. There's a man sitting on a bus, and his kids are on the bus with him, and the bus is packed. Kids are 3 and 5 years old. And he's got his head up against the window and just staring out the window. And the kids, 3 and 5, they're running around the bus, just running around, just screaming, woo, yeah. They're having a good old time on the bus. They're jumping over the seats. They're pounding on the back of seats. And if you've ever been on a bus and it's like, or a plane, and they're kicking the seats and doing that, right? This is what these kids are doing. And somebody across like, can you control them? Because it's really bothering us. And he doesn't say anything. He just keeps staring out the window. So somebody else says, sir, can you please keep them in their seats? Like, it's really bothering us. We don't want to have to deal with your children. Like, we have our own issues that we're dealing with. Doesn't say a word. So now the bus is really getting angry. Now they get together in this mob, what I call mob mentality, and they're like, do something with your kids. And he like snaps out of zoning out, and he goes, I'm sorry, I'll take care of them. He said, see, we just came from the hospital where my wife just passed away. And I'm sorry that I didn't get the chance to take care of them because I don't even know what to think. See, what they felt was the perception, what the reality was different. They were looking at these unruly kids, and they were, let's be honest. But the reason they were unruly is they just lost their mother. The reason he wasn't taking care of them was he didn't know what to do at that point. And we can get ourselves into that where I'm just going to stare out the window. I know all this stuff's going on, but I can't deal with it. You need to have someone beside you every week, every day. We need to see the situation for what it really is. See the reality before you. But it doesn't stop there, because that's where we can go into the woe is me. See, because the next thing with what he does is sharing the vision boldly. Share God's vision. See what his vision is. And here's the thing. Those of you coming alongside of those that need it, the Lord has already told you what you need to do and what you, not say do, say. Come alongside him. But sometimes it's to say nothing. But when he does, we are called to share the vision boldly. In verse 17, he says, then I said to them, you see the trouble we're in. Then he goes on later and says, come, let us build the ruins. Now, when I first read this week, I'm like, don't you think if they thought they could do that, they would have been working on it over the last 140 years? Literally, I was like, Lord, why didn't they just start something? Start somewhere. Start Like, yeah, you were in exile for a while, then you came back. Like, if there's nothing there, why did you stay? Well, that's your home. Okay, so I don't know, when my home is out of disarray, the one thing I think to do, and not always do, but is to clean up the house, right? So I'm thinking, why over all that time did they not, why did it take Nehemiah? But it did. But then he goes on to say that, I tell them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king said to me. See, this is where the rubber meets the road. We're all good at pointing out issues. But can we come alongside and share the vision with them? The things in the community around us need help. But are we, when we are asked to do something, sometimes it's easier, like, oh, somebody else will take care of that. There was an accident on the side of the road one time. We live up near Mill Creek Park. And there was literally a lady who was in a car, still in the driver's seat, went down into a ravine and just sitting there. And there were like cars lined up and there were tons of people over to see if she was okay. To which then I go, did anyone call 911? Like, we all want to help out. We see the problem, but did anyone do the next step and call 911? And they did. And so a lot of us were like, she's like, I'm fine. I'm just embarrassed. You know, she's literally like sideways. And fortunately not the, but she was sideways and she seemed to be okay. But it's a matter of being able to see it and then take that next step. In fact, if we go back to the first chapter, after he had the heart and after he had the vision, he then took a next step, and it was a step of faith. He's the cupbearer to the king, and he clearly says at the end of the first chapter, and I was cupbearer to the king. And it's important to understand that, because that's an important thing. Because the cupbearer was the one that was going to test that wine to see if it was poisoned, if somebody else was trying to do something. So he became really close to the king. Best friend kind of a situation, like, I can't let anybody else. He was the closest thing to the king. And so he then says to the king, he's like, I want to go do this. Can you help me out? Then he goes one step further and says, and can you send letters along the way? Because I want to have that favor along the way. That took a step of faith and some boldness, because you're like, I'm resigning. Because the king even asked him, he goes, how long is it going to take? Like, when are you coming back? I need you, man. Like, I'll send you, but I need you back. And he gave him a time. And I think it was just to appease the king. I think in the king's heart, he knew, if I'm going to send you, I know you're going to stay there. Those are your people. You have a heart for them. He knew what to ask and who to ask because of his connection. And I say to you, you have connections. You may not have the answers, but somebody in your life does. It's part of the reason why we're called Connection Church. Because we found that as we go through life, the connections that we've made isn't for us. For us to connect other people to the people that need it. The verse is replying, though, referring to when Nehemiah approached the leaders in Jerusalem. The ones that could have done something in the past and didn't. They know the situation. They live in it. They were the leaders that could have said, come on, let's do something about this. And I think they just got wrapped up in the day after day after day, the year after year after year. But Nehemiah doesn't stop with the situation. He shares the vision. And then he helps them on the journey. This is what we in our circle call discipleship. This is when we need to have groups of people. We have groups that we hang out with. We just got together with another ministry couple today. It's important to gather yourself around people that are going to lift you up, encourage you, but also challenge you when you need it in love. And this is what Nehemiah is doing in this moment. You need to have someone that knows what God is doing and can see it in you. And I believe they were inspired when he told them. I truly do. I think they were waiting in some way for someone to come alongside of them and go, let's do this thing. Come on, we can do this. We had to do that with our group. Come on, let's build a church. Let's do this. And then, of course, we get reminded all the time, the Lord's going to build the church. Yes, I know. But there's some things we have to do. We have to bring chairs in. We have to set equipment up. And for several months, we did that each month. Because then they were encouraged, because it's going to restore their dignity. The third point is, once we go through that, then stand firm in the face of doubt. People are going to tell you it's not going to work. People are going to tell you some other things. You're going to have doubt, because they're going to give it to you. And if you don't doubt now, they will give you a doubt for you. We're going to face people that doubt no matter what. That's just who they are. I don't know what to say about that, other than you're going to have people in your life that just are going to doubt everything you do. When we started this church, people doubted what we're going to do. There's no way. Why are they doing that? Why are you doing that? Doesn't make sense. Everything the Lord does doesn't make sense. He does everything upside down and backwards. So we're going to do this thing because he told us to. There will be people that aren't happy. That's okay. Get yourself around some people that will be helping for you. We stayed firm. We encouraged that. I think that Nehemiah did the same thing. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to help you through this. This isn't just because there were some doubt, because in verse 19, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, they mocked him. What is this you're doing? Are you rebelling against the king? And he answered them, the God of heaven will give us success. You need those people in your life that are going to go, I got you. I understand what they're saying. But let me tell you, we can do this. We're going to succeed. You're going to succeed. In Isaiah 41, verse 10, it says, so do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. He's with you. He's going to be with you. There's going to be times that are tough. Following Jesus is not easy. And the more you do and the closer you get, the more burden is placed on you, the more the enemy does literally want to fight against what you're doing. It's going to attack every point. But again, do not mix up some of the decisions you make that are just bad decisions as the enemy. You can be your own worst enemy. But just understand that you do not need to fear. This isn't about proclaiming boldness like I can do anything. You can understand that everything comes with a consequence, and that's a good and bad consequence. So sometimes when you step out like I'm going to be bold in this and you get backlash from it, it could be because the Lord wasn't ready for you to move on to whatever it is or to say what it is. Sometimes I'm a visionary. I can see where the Lord wants to take us, and sometimes I spit vision out, and I'm like, oh, that wasn't for now. And people are like, when is this going to happen? And it's like, I got to pull that back. But here's the thing. We don't need to be dismayed. He's with us. So here's how I want to summarize today is see, speak, and stand. See the vision, speak the vision, and stand on the vision. That's what you're called to do. That's what we're called to do. Nehemiah did that. But what does that mean for us as a church? Nehemiah was helping the people to see what was going on in Jerusalem, that they can come together to make that community better, supported, protected. Now, I'm not claiming to be Nehemiah by any stretch of the imagination. But as a church, we have been praying for next steps. We have continue to pray for our next outreach to be a part of. And we've heard from the Lord to continue to build and support the people of this community and of Connection Church. To build a community within the community. And here's some things that we're excited that we're going to begin building, because as we become a stronger unit, see, Nehemiah brought the people together within those walls to do the things for the community. And the way they did that was in small groups. And if you read in there, and I encourage you to, it was this family with this family, then this family with this family. Oh, wait, the leaders were doing it too. And then they each had different jobs to do. So these are a few things that are on our horizon, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with them, but we've already started a prayer team, and we're still continuing to look for a prayer team, not just to go walk, because anybody can walk and pray. Everybody can walk and pray as well. But we're literally looking for those people that are going to be intercessors praying over every prayer, over every situation in the community. Children's ministry. We're looking for to build up our children's ministry, yes, for our house, so that we can tell families, hey, come in. We have a place for your children. But even more importantly is to take that children's ministry out to the public where the kids are. One of the things I can tell you is the elementary school wants to partner with us. What a better way than to go, hey, we've got a team already ready to go. They want to partner with you. Let's go do this. So we're looking for people to come in and to work with us in children's ministry. Women's ministry. All I'll say is look for that to happen sooner than later, because the Lord is moving things really fast in our church. But we're going to do a women's ministry. We're going to do a men's ministry. Those are going to look completely different from each other, and that's good because we're wired differently. But we are looking at that. But most important, and what I think is even more important than all that, because you need those groups, is what I'm calling connect groups. You can call them life groups, small groups, or whatever. Look, I'm not going to be up here and be like, life is better in circles than rows. Like, that's the go-to. Because what if you don't sit in a circle when you're with them? What if you're at a, you know, anyhow. But it is important to have people around you and meet with them. It's important to find and connect with that community. They will be the ones, look, I want to pray over everybody. But I know as we not only connect with the community, but grow as a church, it's going to be tougher and tougher for me to connect with you. But what you can do is there's going to be other people around you that will be there. They will know your life. They will know what's going on. They'll celebrate all those celebratory moments. They'll mourn in those moments. They'll be at the hospital with you, and they'll report back to me as well. But we need to develop these connect groups. This is how we're going to continue to build the walls of our community, is to strengthen the walls from within. We are going to move forward with a lot of these things, but not at the expense of doing for the community. If I don't have a children's ministry, but we have an outreach, we're going to go do it. We have children's rooms ready to go, and I said, look, I'm not going to just plunk somebody in there. But we do have a space that if they wanted to go play or color or do, there's a space for that. We're not just going to fill holes. We want to know it's the right people for the right time, because we are going to do what's right for the community. That's what we've been called for. I'm going to encourage you to stand as we finish up here. If we're going to continue to be a church that's about the community, we need to be healthy and whole. You need to be healthy and whole. We need to be healthy and whole to accomplish all that the Lord is going to continue to ask us. We need to also help care for one another here at Connection Church. That's why I encourage you. You need my water? I'm going to encourage you to hang out with us. We have Connection Cafe. We have snacks back there. It's not just like your typical before church on Sunday stuff. We do have some different things back there. But to connect with other people here. Even, again, if you have another church, we're connecting with churches all over this area. We have friends from a bunch of churches now and leaders, and we're doing this together. So connect with us. We invite you to hang out. I encourage everyone today to lean into the Lord. See where He wants you to be. See what He wants you to do. What's the vision that He's given you personally? And then what are the people around you saying to you that you're like, oh, yeah, that's something I need to follow? Or, no, that's just somebody just mocking what my situation is. I'm going to invite Carrie up as we pray. May the Lord who called Nehemiah to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem stir our hearts to see the needs of our own community. May His Spirit grant us courage to step out in faith, to survey what is broken, and to envision what could be renewed. As Nehemiah rallied the people to rise and build, may we rise together, living side by side, working shoulder to shoulder, building a community of grace, trust, and hope. May our hands be strengthened, our hearts united, and our eyes fixed on God's purposes above our very own. May the God of heaven prosper the work of our hands and bless the relationships formed among us. And as we go, may His favor rest upon us, His wisdom guide us, and His joy sustain us until our lives and our community reflect His glory. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.